New York City is a place of endless discoveries. There's so much to do and see here, but some places you'll never find on a tourist map. Good morning. I'm George Borarchy, and this is Cityscape on 90.7 FM and WFUV.org. On this morning's show, we're talking with a couple of guys who venture to places that show a side of New York City that couldn't be any more different than the glitz and glamour of Times Square. Both gentlemen have new books out that take us beyond restricted access and no trespass signs. We begin with Matthew Litwack, who's a co-author of a book that shines a light on a graffiti art scene that exists in a dark and gritty place, the city's underground. The book is called Beneath the Streets, The Hidden Relics of New York's Subway System. Matthew, welcome to Cityscape.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So are you a native New Yorker?
Yes, I am. I'm born and raised in Brooklyn, and I've lived in the city for 33 years now.
How did this book come about?
Well, as a youth, I had explored the subway system for quite some time. Growing up in New York City, I was always fascinated by the subway. And in my teenage years, I began to actually explore the insides of the subway tunnels.
Unknowing to your parents, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, well, my mother, she actually was aware of it to a degree, and I must have given her a lot of stress as a kid.
I'm sure. Mm-hmm. How did you get into the subway tunnels as a kid?
Well, I was actually mentored by an older explorer who was a graffiti artist, and he brought me to some locations initially so I would kind of know the lay of the land. It was made it a lot easier for me to go into these environments, kind of knowing my way around them, having been taught so.
Were you a graffiti artist as a teenager as well?
My background is in graffiti.
What was it like going in there? Any fear?
Oh, certainly. I mean, you don't know what to expect. It's dark. It's very scary. And there are homeless people living down there. There's a lot of different elements you have to compete with, like the third rail and the subway train itself.
So yeah, there's a lot of you can get electrocuted.
You can get electrocuted, yes. The third rail is always on.
Did you have any close calls while you were down there?
When I was much younger, yes. I had some situations with the third rail going up in flames around me and some other situations where I came in very close proximity to locations where there was a lack of clearance in terms of being hit by the train.
There are red and white stripes along the subway walls to indicate that lack of clearance, right?
Exactly, and we outline that in the book. The subway track workers refer to those strips on the wall as the blood and bones because if you're standing there, that's all that's left of you.
Yeah, there's literally no room between you and the train there.
Yeah, no clearance whatsoever.
Wow. So then you spent some time as a kid traversing the tunnels, spray painting walls, I guess.
One could say, yes.
What kinds of things would you put on those walls?
Well, I'm a traditional graffiti artist, and that's my background. So most of the stuff was letter-based. The majority of the painting I did down there was with a combination of bucket and spray paint, so that the walls there are so old. There's some of the subway tunnels are over 110 years old at this point. So there's so much steel dust on the walls, you need to oftentimes apply a base coat of bucket paint so that you can have some color on the wall. Industrial spray paint won't always go on the wall without a base layer of bucket paint.
Why, as a graffiti artist, do work where pretty much no one will ever see it besides perhaps maintenance workers for the MTA?
Well, that's actually something that a lot of the graffiti artists that we interviewed in the book discussed, and they often all echo the same sentiment that the thrill and the rush and the ultimate danger that was down there that they were exposed to just was a feeling that they had to keep going back for. And in addition to that, the history of graffiti is in the subway tunnels. The graffiti in the subway tunnels is not cleaned. So you have graffiti down there that's 30, 40 years old, and to paint down there and to become a part of that and a part of that legacy and that lore is what keeps a lot of people from going back into the tunnels.
Some of the graffiti artists that you interviewed for this book also said that they felt a sense of peace down there. They felt free down there.
Certainly. I mean, the subway tunnels, as dangerous as they are, they're also a place of great solitude and peacefulness. Once you kind of get situated in a portion of the tunnel that isn't as dangerous, where there is clearance and where you don't have to worry about the train or the third rail, it's really one of the most isolated places in all of New York City.
What about getting caught? I would imagine if you got caught, you can get in some pretty serious trouble.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who goes and trespasses into the subway tunnels, even without spray paint, is committing a crime. and then the act of vandalism is a crime within itself.
What does it smell like down there? Because a lot of the artists do talk about the smell.
Yeah, well, actually, each subway line has kind of a different smell to it. Different subway lines were constructed over different periods of time. The way that the stones, the rocks are laid on the track bed, the types of filth you even see on the walls, the color of the walls, they all kind of add to the environment. And each environment is, depending on which train line you're inside of, has a really different feel, a really different smell to it in the air.
Not all of the subway tunnels featured in your book are utilized today. Some are abandoned.
Yes, there's actually a lot of abandoned subway stations in the subway system. There's around 10 of them, and graffiti artists refer to these places as ghost stations. In addition to that, there are entire abandoned subway tracks, levels that are not used at all by the MTA trains.
What's it like to be in a station that you know has not been used in a long time? I would imagine it's pretty eerie.
It's pretty eerie. There's a lot of debris, a lot of garbage in these kinds of places, a lot of old graffiti, and graffiti artists are able to actually paint in these abandoned stations much more freely because it's set back from the actual track bed. And in addition to that, the walls are tiled, so you can apply spray paint to them with greater ease.
In the book, you talk about something called King Kong's Lair. What and where is that?
Okay, well, I won't disclose exactly where it is,
okay,
but it's a pretty unique location in the subway system where you're underground, but there's a huge window in the tunnel itself alongside the tunnel wall, and you can look out outside the window and see part of Brooklyn and see a set of abandoned train tracks below. So it's a unique place, especially if you're there in the daytime where you can see sunlight coming in.
You also talk about layup tunnels. What are layup tunnels?
Okay, so a layup is a place where they house the train at night, or they'll house a train maybe during a snowstorm. And these were places that graffiti artists years ago, when trains were painted, would go and paint subway cars. And when you go to these old layups or these old abandoned levels where they house trains, you can find some of the oldest graffiti in the New York City subway system. You can find graffiti that's like 40 years old.
Really?
In some places, yeah.
The book features the work of a graffiti artist who goes by the name of Revs. Do I have that right? Revs?
Yeah, Revs. That's how you pronounce it.
He's written an autobiography of sorts on the walls of subway tunnels, huh?
Yes, yes. He's written, I won't give the specific number, but he's written hundreds of pages of his autobiography scattered throughout the New York City subway system. And it's really fascinating, and it's really difficult to even comprehend how much work and how much effort went into doing this. It's just such a massive project that took him years to complete.
What was his motivation for doing that?
I think you'd have to ask him. But these stories are pretty interesting because they're a mixture of anecdotes, personal memoirs, and then a lot of the stories also focus on his general philosophy on life. So you really, after reading a handful of them, you start to kind of get into the mind of who this man is or who perhaps he sees himself as.
What passage stuck with you most, would you say?
Well, actually, a lot of times when Revs paints in the subway tunnels with other people, they'll paint pages as well. And there's one artist who goes by the name of Peak, and he would do a lot of poetry in the subway tunnels. And one of the poems that he wrote is featured in the book Beneath the Streets as well. And it's a poem about his mother and a lot of the strife that they had growing up in his household. And I never forgot that in all the years of all the different photos I've looked at of these kinds of pages.
How does graffiti art underground differ from graffiti art above ground, street art?
Okay, so I would say it differs in two ways. One, it may not be as aesthetically pleasing to the eye because the walls are so dirty there. A lot of the graffiti down there is just tagging or simple graffiti. It's not very in-depth. It's not very colorful. It can't be. In addition to that, and this is something that a lot of the graffiti artists talk about in the book, you know, the experience of painting graffiti, that's like the art in itself, what the artist is going through. And clearly going into a place like this, competing with all these elements, is such a more dangerous experience than painting above ground.
Would you say it's an addiction? You talked about how they want to go back and back and back again, but do they do this for years and years?
Yeah, I mean, there's people who explore and paint the subway system. There are people who have been doing that for 20 years at this point in their lives. So I would say it's a thing people keep coming back to in their lives.
Did any of these artists also share close calls, dangerous close calls?
Yeah, I mean, there's an artist who goes by the name of Hayes. He's actually a very successful commercial artist now, and he talks about running along top of the wooden covering of the third rail and getting shocked. Another artist by the name of Ket in the book, he discusses a situation where he was in a no-clearance section that felt like it was going on forever, and he had to actually run at a train that was coming at him to get back into a safer zone. So people have, like, really close calls there, and as recently as 7 or 8 months ago, a very well-established graffiti artist who went by the name of DG1 was electrocuted by the third rail at the mouth of a subway tunnel. And this is someone who had extensive experience painting in these kinds of locations. So first and foremost, it's not for the faint of heart, and we're not advocating in this book that people go to these locations and explore these types of environments.
So Matthew, when you put a book out like this, is there concern that you're going to raise some eyebrows, especially among the MTA?
Yeah, the MTA doesn't like it when people infiltrate these environments, and it's not the kind of places that they want documented and necessarily exposed to the public. With that being said, the photography in our book comes from a wide variety of photographers and was compiled over the course of, well over a decade at this point.
What would you say has surprised you most in putting this book together and gathering all of this photographic evidence of graffiti underground?
Well, I'd actually have to say that having done this so much when I was younger, that these locations are almost like second nature to me, going to these environments, and nothing necessarily surprised me all that much because I was so familiar with them. With that being said, I think if people do buy the book and see the book, they'll be really taken aback by especially the abandoned stations underground and just all of the effort that all these graffiti artists have put in painting underground.
What do you want people to take away from this book?
That there's a hidden world beneath the streets that people are really unaware of throughout the course of their everyday lives. Millions of people ride the subway system every single day, but they don't peer out the windows. They don't know the tales of these graffiti artists that have risked their lives painting underground. And in addition to that, people don't know about all the abandoned stations and all the abandoned tracks that exist in the subway system. So hopefully this book can really shed light on that.
The book features one work of art that was actually sanctioned by the MTA. Tell us about that.
Okay, yeah, that's by an artist by the name of Bill Brand. He's actually a professor at Hampshire College now. And he did an installation called Mass Transiscope. It operates sort of like a zoetrope or a flipbook. And when you're going past an abandoned station on the D train, as the train makes its way over the Manhattan Bridge, you see this 228-panel illustration of a bunch of geometric shapes that eventually shift into a rocket ship that takes off into outer space. And it's really awesome. It's really cool to look at. And it's interesting, too. I'll be on the train a lot, and I take a look at it every single time I'm on the train. And I'm always amazed by how many people aren't taking note of it. So it's a really great piece. And Bill was he was nice enough to give us those photos of him installing it, 35 years ago.
All right, Matthew, anything that we didn't talk about that you'd want to add?
Well, no, I would just like to say that this was a huge project that my close friend Journey and I both participated in for the better half of a decade. And we had, I would say, 24 contributors, photographers, and graffiti artists that were willing to sit down and be interviewed by us. And it was a really great experience. And I hope if people go and buy the book, they can learn something about the city that they live in.
And again, though, do not try this at home.
Do not try this at home. We're not advocating this in any way, shape, or form.
Matthew, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Matthew Litwack is a Brooklyn native and a co-author of Beneath the Streets, The Hidden Relics of New York's Subway System. It's out now from Ginkgo Press. You're listening to Cityscape on 90.7 FM and WFUV.org. Good morning once again. I'm George Bodarkey. Our next guest is also capturing a side of New York City few have ever seen. Photographer Will Ellis spent a few years exploring the city's abandoned places, including decaying asylums and hospitals. He first posted his images on a blog called Abandoned NYC, but now he also has a book of the same name. Will, thanks so much for coming in.
Hi there, George. How's it going?
Very good. So when did you first start photographing abandoned places in New York City?
Well, it wasn't too long ago. I've only been doing this for about 3 years. I was just kind of out in Red Hook one day, wandering around with my camera, kind of looking for some kind of inspiration. And that day I came across this big empty warehouse by the water on Imlay Street. And today this place is being turned into luxury condominiums. They're going to be putting in a rooftop swimming pool. But back then it was totally abandoned, and you also looked like you could just walk right into this place. And I'd never done anything like that before. I was not any kind of daredevil or rule breaker. But I was very intrigued by this place, kind of wondering what it might look like inside. So I just kind of paced around the block a few times, saw there was no one around, and walked right in.
So you trespassed.
I did, yeah. And it was surprising to find out how easy it was to do that. We like to think there are these kind of boundaries that exist between places we're supposed to go, places we're not supposed to go in New York City. But in the case of abandoned buildings, it's a pretty simple task to overtake those boundaries, I find.
So what did it look like when you got inside?
You know, there really wasn't too much to see in there, and I've gotten a chance to see some pretty spectacular places since then. But this place was just kind of a shell of a building, just kind of peeling paint, empty floors. But what kind of stuck with me was that sense of adventure, the sense of, you know, discovering something, and that's kind of what got me hooked.
What's your background in photography?
I actually went to film school. I went to NYU and did kind of cinematography. And decided after paying all that tuition that the film industry was not for me and switched into photography. And this was actually kind of the first big project I did that I really kind of saw through. And that's what I'm pursuing right now.
So when did you decide to start posting these photographs on your blog, Abandoned NYC?
Yeah, I think it was just a few months in. And, you know, I'd started to become maybe a little bit jaded to, you know, the dark corridors and things like that. Wasn't quite as exciting as it was when I first started. But I think what kept me interested was going in and looking at the history of these places. A lot of that is digging through the archives of the New York Times. And so the blog was a way for me to, you know, share the photos and also give some of the background, the stories behind the decay.
So what was that very next place that you went to after that abandoned property in Red Hook?
Well, it's interesting. So I basically continued on that same day walking up the Brooklyn waterfront from Red Hook and ended up by the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And there's a place called Admiral's Row. This is the only time I've ever gotten into that place was that first day. And the pictures I took were terrible. I didn't even have a tripod. But it's this beautiful whole block of abandoned old officers' buildings, these beautiful old buildings. They're really in terrible shape, really falling apart, so I don't think I'll be able to get back into those. But I basically just started, you know, researching. A lot of it is just looking online at other people who are doing this kind of thing and kind of going down the list of places I wanted to see, and I would go out, you know, every chance I got, every weekend, every day off, and seeing more and more.
What are among your most memorable shoots?
Well, they all kind of stand out for different reasons, but sometimes they can all kind of start to look the same, like the old asylums can all, you know, once you've seen one, you've seen them all kind of thing. but one that really stands out is an old mental institution in Queens that has been abandoned, or one particular ward has been abandoned for 3 or 4 decades. And there's been a population of pigeons living up there over that period of time. So today, all of their droppings from the past 40 years
wow.
have accrued into these massive formations that cover every surface of that top floor. And it's disgusting for sure. And the smell was horrible, but also just the most surreal, bizarre place I've ever been. Kind of like the inside of a cavern or something, the way that these stalactites had formed.
Do you feel the ghostly presence, if you will, of what was there before, of life before these properties became abandoned?
Well, ghosts, it's a funny thing. I love the idea of ghosts and definitely love anything creepy and spooky. I think you can tell just by looking at the pictures. But I'm also a skeptic. I've never really come across anything I would describe as supernatural. But I'm definitely always looking for those details or things left behind that point to the way a building was used or who lived there or worked there. Definitely are always looking for that human presence. And in New York City, these places are usually kind of picked through. You know, you have people going in all the time, going in and out. So a lot of times there's not much left, and you really have to look for those little touches of, you know, what it might have been like before.
Things that were left behind. Take a photograph of that. What was that like? Who might have slept in that bed, for instance, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Now, you've also photographed an abandoned school. Was that in Harlem? Am I right?
That's right. That's another one of my favorites, actually, because it was very early on when it did feel very exciting. It really did feel like this big adventure to be going into these places. And on that particular day, I woke up like 3 a.m. and made my way up to the school, got in just before dawn, and was able to watch the sunrise in this classroom. It was just beautiful. That place has been abandoned around 40 years, similar to Creedmoor. And today there are, you know, trees growing out of the floor, and it's just beautiful. And when I first went, there was very little graffiti. That's changed since then, and it's also being renovated now. Believe it or not, it's hard to believe if you see what this place looks like that they're actually building something out of it. But it's happening. They've taken out a lot of the trees already. It's hard to see that place go.
That being said, many of the buildings that you've photographed have already been remodeled or demolished. Do you see yourself as capturing New York City's history in these images?
There's definitely a documentary aspect to it. It is kind of nice to think I'm creating this catalog of buildings that are not going to be this way for much longer. They're going to be renovated. They're going to be demolished. You know, part of the appeal of abandoned buildings is that it's ephemeral, this state that they're in right now. Something, one way or another, they're going to change. I think probably more than the pictures, the writing is more of a valuable way of documenting these places because the history is what's really going to be forgotten. And a lot of this history is, you know, local history that isn't going to make it into the textbooks. And it's not going to be remembered if we don't take a chance to do the research and write up these and write up the history.
What history behind a project has fascinated you most? Something that really surprised you? Wow, would have no idea that this building had that history.
Well, there are often kind of two stages of history with abandoned buildings. There's what happened to it before it was abandoned. And also some of them have even more interesting histories after it was abandoned. I like to think of it as kind of the afterlife of the building. So one that's a good example of that is the Gowanus Bat Cave. Its history is mildly interesting.
The Gowanus Bat Cave. First of all, what is the book? What is the Gowanus Bat Cave?
Well, so this is a building that goes by the name the Bat Cave. Supposedly bats used to live in there. That's where it got its name, or so the story goes. But it was originally a power station for the Brooklyn Rapid Transit Company. So basically powered the subway in Brooklyn. But it was abandoned at some point in the 1980s. And in the early 2000s, it was discovered by a group of squatters, kind of teenage runaways, who settled inside the building and, you know, lived there for several years. And at first, you know, held a pretty positive reputation as squats go, but kind of went into a downward spiral. There were a lot of problems with violence and drug overdose. And eventually these people were kicked out. But what was really interesting about that place was you could go in and see everything they had left behind. All of their furniture and belongings were set up as if they had just left. But often these buildings don't just stand alone. They fit into larger trends that have taken place over the course of the past 200 years or so. So the asylums are a good example of that. There are also a lot of military sites in New York City, which you don't often associate New York with, like this rich military background. But a lot of those are just kind of crumbling away today. A lot of remnants of the industrial age of Brooklyn on the waterfront. So you can really, by tracing these abandoned buildings, learn a lot about the history of a city like New York.
You've also photographed the Freedom Tunnel. First of all, where is that, and what's the story there? I know that was also a homeless encampment for a time.
Yeah, the Freedom Tunnel is actually not abandon at all, and I've gotten some flack for that from on Twitter, but because it is the cover of the book and it's not abandoned. But yeah, it was abandoned for several decades. It runs right under Riverside Park. While it was abandoned, it became known as the Freedom Tunnel, and a group of squatters again settled inside there. They were called the Mole People, and reached kind of like celebrity status in the late 80s, early 90s. People were really interested to hear their story. There were hundreds of people down there, and in some cases had some pretty intricate living setups. They had pens for cats and dogs and cooking facilities, electrical hookups. None of that is left behind today. Today Amtrak runs trains through there every 30, 45 minutes or so. But it's also a mecca for graffiti artists, and you can go in and see a lot of the old murals that were put in place there in the 1980s.
When you're trespassing on property, be it abandoned or not, in the case of the Freedom Tunnel, I would imagine that there is a certain level of danger involved.
There is, yeah. And, you know, some people, I think, are in it for that reason, the adrenaline rush or kind of the thrill of breaking the law. But for me, it's really just kind of a necessary evil. It's the only way to get inside these places, to access them, usually because no one has anything to gain from having you take pictures of their dilapidated building, right? It's a liability issue. These places are dangerous. But I've been very lucky. I really haven't had a lot of problems, especially in New York City, with ever being stopped by police or arrested or anything like that. In New York, I think people see the strangest things all the time, that, you know, they see you clambering over a fence or slipping through a hole or a window. You know, they're just going to kind of look the other way. But yeah, I've been very lucky on that front.
Now, you've been blogging under your real name, right, Will Ellis? Could you get in trouble simply for posting these photographs, putting yourself out there? People know that you're trespassing. Is there some sort of process for going after you?
In theory, and, you know, that was a big concern, you know, in the process of doing the book, that, you know, one of these property owners could go after me for trespassing or for publishing these photos. But the laws are very iffy on that front. So while it's illegal to trespass, it's not necessarily illegal to publish those photos in that context. And the fact is, I've just never had any kind of hint of, you know, I've never been contacted by any owners, or no one has ever gone after me at all. So I think at this point, the book's been out a couple of months and haven't heard a peep. So I think I'm in the clear. We'll see.
How many places are featured in the book?
There's 16 locations in the book.
And how many altogether would you say you photographed over the course of those 3 years?
I'd say maybe around 30, something like that.
Now, you had the blog, you have a book. Does this project continue? Does Abandoned NYC live on?
Well, you know, I think at this point I've kind of built up a little following, and I definitely want to keep it going. But I'm also kind of excited to move on to something else. So I think, you know, if I'm able to get out to a new place every month or so and write it up, who knows, there might be, you know, Abandoned NYC 2, the book. I don't know. But yeah, I do want to keep it going, but also move on and do something completely different.
What would that be for you?
Well, I'm kind of interested in going into some of these wild areas of New York City. A lot of them are kind of on the waterfront and technically parks, but totally neglected, and all kinds of interesting people go there, and you see a lot of abandoned cars and old industrial remnants and things like that. And I think it's, you know, it's obviously similar, goes with some of the same themes, but to show people that this kind of natural beauty exists in New York City, I think would be pretty surprising.
Will Ellis, thank you so much for coming in.
All right. Thanks, George.
That was Will Ellis. He's the author of the blog and book Abandoned NYC. More information at abandonednyc.com. And that's it for this week's Cityscape. You can listen to past episodes of the show at any time at wfuv.org/cityscape. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and you'll find us on Facebook and Twitter as well. So there are lots of ways to stay connected to WFUV's cityscape. I'm George Bodarkey. My thanks to producers Taylor Nulk and Claire Drake. Have a great weekend.
It's WFUV and WFUV HD, New York. Listener-supported public media from Fordham, the Jesuit University of New York. Music discovery starts here.